Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Dr. Meg Meeker, and today we're going to enjoy a talk that my co-host, Ryan Dobson, gave at a recent event as he discussed some of the themes from his new book, Wanting to Believe. As you can imagine, it was tough growing up as a son of Dr. James Dobson, and Ryan had to go through a process that many of us go through, a process to discover if what his parents had taught him his entire life was really true. So without further ado, here is Ryan Dobson for part one of Faith, Family, and Finding an Exceptional Life on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
You know, I'm talking about my book, Wanting to Believe. It's based off of the scripture in Mark 9, where there's a dad and he's got a son who's sick. And he has a demon inside him that causes him to seize up and grind his teeth, and it's thrown him into a fire, and the dad is desperate. Anybody have kids? You ever felt desperate because of a situation with your kids? I mean, it's daily almost. I've had that feeling. And he's gone to all the other disciples. He's gone to the experts. He's gone to the people that you go to when you're in trouble, and they couldn't do anything. And finally, he makes his way to Jesus, and he says, "If you can do anything, please have mercy on us." And Christ says, "If I can, all things are available to him who believes." And you can see the desperation as the dad says, I do believe. Help my unbelief. And that's my whole story. I believe. Just help my unbelief. It's hard to get over those roadblocks, those speed bumps. When Lincoln was about two, I have an autoimmune disease. I've had it my entire life. I inherited it probably from my biological parents. And it's been a struggle. A year ago, I was supposed to be hunting with at Galen Millie's Ranch. I called my dad and told him I wasn't feeling good, and he said, okay. And he was there with Dr. Roy and Caroline and Jeremy. And I hadn't told my parents how sick I had gotten. I've been sick a long, long time, and it's bad. There's really no way to describe it. It's really bad. It's a terrible sickness. It had gone further and further and further, and I was getting experimental treatments, and it was kind of helping a little bit, but I had gotten so sick that I wasn't able to fully understand how sick I was. And my mom and I were on a trip, and I was really, really bad on that trip. I was losing coherence a little bit, and she got home and called my dad. I'm a 43-year-old man. I'm an adult. I'm supposed to be able to take care of myself. And she called my dad when he was hunting and said, "Ryan's not telling you the whole story. He is sicker than we know, and you need to intervene." And Dr. Roy was there, and he started asking my dad what my symptoms were, and he said, "You got to get that kid to a hospital." Now, Laura had been trying to get me to the hospital for weeks, and I was being stubborn, and I wouldn't go. Because I said, what are they going to tell me, that I'm sick? I already know I'm sick. I've been sick my whole life. This is just what I deal with. And she was worried, and she was, you know, fretting over it. And I got home from this trip, and I was crashing. I had lost 25 pounds in 2 weeks. I had gotten highly, highly, highly dehydrated and anemic. And Dr. Roy called, and I don't remember much of the conversation. I remember trying to avoid it. I tried to focus on hunting and how they were doing and not how sick I was. And he said, "I've called the ER and they're waiting for you." And I thought, that's odd. That doesn't sound good. And then he closed with, "I'm gonna call your wife now." And I was like, oh. Well, now I have to go. People are like, why would you do that? Let's not forget that when my dad had his heart attack, on the same court that Pistol Pete died on, he didn't go to the hospital or tell anyone. He self-diagnosed himself with an esophageal spasm and went to drive home and got halfway there and thought, well, maybe I should go to the hospital. Then turned around, drove himself back to the hospital, and then sat in the parking lot for a half hour wondering, do I really want to go in? Because he knows what's going to happen. You walk in, say, I'm having chest pains, and that's, you know, your life's over for a while. And lo and behold, he had a massive heart attack. So I got to the ER. I've never had a doctor call me an idiot before, let alone three of them. And he said I was about a day from going into a coma. I had gotten that bad. And that was a turning point for me. I've changed my diet. I've changed how I live completely from then on. And I'm healthier than I've been since probably my 20s. But that was a big deal. And when Lincoln was about two, we thought he had inherited what I've got. And that's my biggest fear for my kids. That was the biggest health thing. I don't want them to have to deal with what I deal with. I wouldn't want anybody to deal with that. And we called the doctor and they said, well, you gotta bring him in. We gotta do a blood draw. We'll figure it out. We'll know very shortly, but you gotta bring him in. And I said, okay, and I'm the hospital guy. I'm the shock guy. I've lived in ER my whole life. I mean, my whole life I've lived in the ER. I didn't know everybody else didn't experience that. I didn't know that till I was in my late 30s. I think I was 38. I was at my friend Sid's house. He's a former pro skateboarder. I bought my first motorcycle from Sid. I got into hot rods because of Sid. We're great friends, and he had fallen skateboarding, and he was hurt, but it wasn't life-threatening. He had, this is gonna sound terrible, but this is, your husbands would understand this. I think he had ruptured a kidney. It was that or a liver, but he wasn't dying. He was just in pain and he was hurt. And I did what any good friend would do. I made fun of him for it. And his mom's a nurse and she was just freaking out and his wife was freaking out. And I was like, you big baby, when's the last time you were in the ER? And he went, well, probably like 6 or 7 years ago. And I went, what? And his mom's like, when were you in the ER? I'm like, I was in the ER 3 months ago. And I was in the ER 7 months before that. I mean, I've been to the ER 30 or 40 times in my life. That was the day I found out that not everybody else experienced that. So I go to the hospital, I've done all the shots, I handle all those things. Once they're hurt, I'm good. Watching them get hurt, I can't handle very well. But once they're hurt, I'm good. And so I took Lincoln down to get the blood draw. I thought they're gonna do a little pinprick on his foot like when he was a baby. And we get there and they said, no, we get to do a blood draw. And I said, what's that gonna entail? He said, we're gonna put a needle in his arm and do a blood draw. And there's a thing in the pediatric ward, there's a big giant chair and I sit in it and I wrap my arms around Lincoln and I hold him down, which he was not thrilled about. He could tell I was nervous and he got really nervous. And they put a little bar in front of him and another nurse holds his arm and then another nurse sticks him with a needle and they do a blood draw and he lost his mind. I mean, he is looking at me like, what are you letting them do to me? There's no way to explain it. How do you explain that to a 2-year-old? I mean, he can barely talk at this point, but he was saying, no, Daddy, no, please, Daddy, please. He's begging, please. He's not angry, he's just sad. And I thought I would die. I was carrying him out to the car. Let's pat him on the back. And he kept saying, Daddy, please. Please don't make me come back here. Please. But what do I say? If he's got my disease, he's gonna have to come back a lot. And this will be a very routine part of his life. I have a new producer that works for me and he was looking at my Instagram feed and he goes, my goodness, you've got about 100 photos of you with an IV in. And I said, yeah, I guess I do. But it just doesn't bother me anymore. I've had it so many times, it doesn't bother me. But this 2-year-old, I couldn't bear. And that's where I was. The Lord's saying, do you trust me? And I said, I do. I just want you to make the right decision. Luckily, Lincoln is, he's perfect. Yeah. But I read in Mark 9 and I know that dad, because I'm that dad. I am desperate for my kids. I'm just desperate for him. I woke up one day and it just dawned. I don't know why it took me a while. It was just, I don't know, maybe a year or so ago when Lucy was an infant, we took an RV trip with an infant, which was a huge mistake because they have to be in a car seat. And that's a terrible thing for an infant to be in a car seat all day. But we were at a stop one night and I was trying to go to sleep and I couldn't go to sleep. And I was just laying up and I was trying to go to sleep. I was, Lord, just let me go to sleep. And he was like, you're not going to sleep. I need to talk to you. And I stayed up most of the night talking to the Lord. And it hit me that night that my responsibility is for their spiritual heritage. That's my responsibility. I'm the one that's got to pass the baton on to that generation. And that is an overwhelming task. It's terrifying. It's paralyzing at times. You just think, there's just no way. I mean, you look at the culture and everything that's going on. When I was in high school, Risky Business came out with Tom Cruise. Anybody remember that? You know, played air guitar in his underwear and slid around all the things. And he had a dream that he was going to have sex for the first time. And he had a nightmare about it, that the police would show up and there were helicopters and his parents would be there. He was so scared. That was taboo. I can't even describe popular movies today. They're so vulgar. I mean, it's just astounding what kids have to grow up with today. Parents say, oh, it was hard when I was growing up. It was. It just wasn't as hard as it is today. It wasn't even close. You look at the top songs and the lyrics of what they're pumping into kids' brains every single day. Rarely does anyone ever sit down with a kid and say, listen, what you believe is totally bogus. It's not true, and I'm going to explain why. There is no God, and we came from monkeys, and this is how I can prove it to you. That's a rarity that someone ever does that, but it's every single day on TV and in music and in movies just whispering in their ear. It's eroding their belief system. You know, I hear kids talk to parents in a way that I literally would never have dreamed of talking to my parents that way. I wouldn't have dreamed of it. It would have never crossed my mind to talk back to my parents in the manner that I hear kids today. But you watch Disney TV, Disney, and the kids talk to their parents in ways that are just appalling. And I've learned this. If you play that in your house long enough, it will seep into your subconscious. And when your kids talk to you that way, your brain says, well, that's how kids talk. It's that way on TV every day, all day. My kids are just like every other kid. But it's not true. And we're losing them. We're just losing them like crazy. And it was a few days later that I woke up and I thought, hey, you know what? I love the Lord. I really do. I'm in full-time ministry. I'm an ordained minister. I love my wife. I love my kids. I love my parents. I work with my dad. I'm in full-time ministry. My parents did a really good job. How did they do that? It's true. I have an amazing set of parents. They are great role models. But those are big shoes to fill. That is, they cast a large shadow. And when I first started working with my dad, I tried to keep up with how much he does. And I burned out very, very, very quickly. He is a very unique individual. He does more than 10 people do. And I thought, I need some help. And I started going back through my life and looking at all the lessons that my parents have taught me and how I've struggled with some of them and how I'm trying to apply them in my own life now. You know, Lucy, if you see her running around, she dressed herself today. She's very proud. She looks super cute. She's wearing boots four sizes too big, but she likes shoes, what could I say? It was so fun. I didn't put this picture up there. She's got a little pair of Vans tennis shoes. We're Californians, that's where I was born and raised. Your first pair of Vans is a big deal in the Dobson household. I'm not wearing them right now. I was wearing Vans yesterday. I have Vans dress shoes because that's a big deal for us. So we went to the Vans store just like 2 months ago, and Lincoln got a pair of Star Wars Vans, which he's very excited about because he loves Star Wars. And we're picking out a pair for Lucy. We had little tiny yellow shoes with white flowers and little Velcro little strap. And I mean, they were so cute. And I tried them on. They fit perfectly. It looked good on her. And we get to the checkout counter and she looks up. She says, Daddy, me no like. And I was like, what? Of course you do. They're Vans. You like Vans. Trust me. This is part of your lineage. You like Vans. And she's like, me no want. And I'm looking at Laura like, do I just force her to get them? Like, what? And I said, what do you want, baby? And she goes, me show you. And she takes my hand and she walks away. And I'm walking through the store like, you have no idea what you're, oh, you brought me to the kid's shoes. And you've picked out a pair. She wanted shoes with laces. She wants to tie her shoes. Velcro is for babies. And she is not a baby. She picked her own pair of shoes out and walked them back up to the counter and set them down. And was like, me want these. I'm like, you're two, you gotta. That was it. She changes her clothes four times a day. I mean, she's a girl. My wife is very feminine. She's not girly. She's not a big frou-frou. She didn't carry a purse. Lucy's been carrying a purse since she could walk. You know, it would drag on the ground. She'd drag that purse around, you know. Fills it with who knows what, but it's full of stuff. She's in that process now where she's learning to sleep by herself. And it's so cute. She got a little, we just bought her a pink bed. Anything, if you ask her anything, she got to ride a horse for the first time yesterday. She's very, very excited. She got to brush the horse and Lincoln got to clean it and brush it. And he rode a horse. He was cleaning hooves. He was telling me all about it. I said, Lucy, what color was the horse? Pink. I'm like, baby, the horse wasn't pink. Pink. Lincoln told me what color it was. If we go to get ice cream, what kind of ice cream do you want? Pink. If you want a party, what kind of party do you want? Pink. I asked her if she'd get a big girl bed because she's going to sleep by herself. And I said, Lucy, what kind of bed do you want? Pink. I mean, just looks at me like I'm silly. So she's got this big pink, you know, quilted top and all this, you know, neat stuff. But when she gets scared, she comes into our bedroom. And I'm kind of the iron fist. And so I'm the one that walks her back. And I take her hand, I walk her back in, and I'll lay on that little twin bed with her. And she gets way up onto me. She just gets as close as she possibly can. I've never seen, you know, it's just, she wants to be near Daddy. And she'll start breathing and she cries a little bit. And I say, it's okay, baby, close your eyes. And she'll go, okay. And then a couple minutes later, her breathing gets slower. And then she does this. She pushes me and she goes, you go away now, Daddy. But I don't. I just sit at the edge. You can tell this is right where I'm at. I mean, I've only got about, I don't know, 2 more weeks of this, and then she'll sleep on her own. It'll be the exception and the rarity that she comes to get Daddy. And I keep seeing the world, especially to moms, telling moms that you are unfulfilled if you are raising kids. You are unfulfilled if you are staying at home. That you are wasting your life and your opportunity and the best years that you have. And what you really need is to go get a career right now. And I think, oh my goodness, they're only in your home for just this long. And then what? My mom's been the president of the National Day of Prayer for 23 years. She started that after I graduated from high school. I left home and she went, and she's had an entire career after that, but she stayed home for us. She could have kept working. She was a teacher and a great teacher. You know, she teaches Lincoln little things on the piano and he loves being with her. She's so good at it, but she stayed home for us. And it made a huge, huge difference on my life and my sister's life. And we're doing that now. We have, you know, neighbors. And if you send your kids to public school and you're offended by this, I guess I'm sorry. I don't know. I'm probably not really that sorry, but I'm supposed to say that, so. Our friends send their kids. They take the bus. It picks them up at 7:30 in the morning. It brings them home at 3:45. They're gone all day. But we're weird because we homeschool our kids and my wife spends all day with them. That's the weird option now. Why is that weird? We get to have them the whole time. We don't have them in a teacher or in a school. We don't know the teachers personally or what all of their beliefs are or what the school is teaching instead of what they ought to be teaching. I mean, I have a friend that's a teacher and she brought me the stack of Common Core stuff for kindergartners. Kindergartners. It takes 40 hours for her to complete the paperwork for those kids. 40 hours. And it's just over. And the stuff is nonsense. But I'm going to keep them in the home as long as I can. Because I want to know who their friends are, who's influencing them, what do they care about, what do they like, what do they know. My parents did that for me. My goodness, I was, ADD, and I have a problem with adrenaline. I don't produce enough of it, and so I keep having to have situations that boost my adrenaline drive. That's not really true, but I still... My dad told you my sister curated all of the memorabilia from the family. She found a note from a story I tell. When I was 4, I decided to see how far I could run across the backyard with my eyes closed. Somehow my little brain knew that if I would close my eyes and run real fast, adrenaline would kick in a big way. And it did. Oh my goodness, that's so exciting. You have no idea. What are you gonna do? Just... I got about 10, 15 feet and tripped and just came flying down. And I hit a metal stake. It hit me right here, bounced off my skull, and kept traveling. 4 years old, I come running the house doing this with a head wound, which is just, you know, everywhere. My poor parents, my goodness. And again, I told you, I've been to the ER literally 30, 40 times in my life. They had to put up with that my whole life, just trying to keep me alive. I got my first set of stitches, not nearly my last, but I got 13 stitches as a 4-year-old, and my dad was out to lunch with a friend. The friend dropped him off, and he came to the house and went to try the door, and it was locked and knocked, and the dog came to the door, but the dog shouldn't be home if nobody else is, and he thought that was weird, and went to the window to look into his office and read upside down a note my sister recently just found that said, Jim, Ryan has split his head open. We're at St. Luke's Hospital. Please hurry. didn't have keys and had to get a ladder and climb in a second story window and then get keys. And that was
one of many.
Amen.
Yeah. I don't know if you know this, that's also probably the impetus for my mom becoming the president of the National Day of Prayer. I'm trying to think, I was, the last time I went to the ER for an accident, I was 34 years old. Oh, I didn't go to the ER, I was in a foreign country, I couldn't go to the ER. Yeah, that's a good call to get from your son who's in South America. I've shattered my wrist and the doctors tell me I shouldn't go to the hospital here, so I'm gonna wait till I get home to fix it. It works. One of those big lessons is prayer. It's following the Lord. When it doesn't make sense, when you're terrified, when you want to, you know, when your kid does crazy stuff, at times you just want to hold them down. Just, I'm going to hold you until you stop doing this. I'm just going to force you to not be crazy. And, you know, at times you got to let them go. And they've prayed for us from since before we were born.
Well, I hate to cut in here, but we're out of time for today. Ryan is absolutely right. Prayer is so important, especially when you're raising kids. If you would like more information about Ryan Dobson or his new book, Wanting to Believe, please call us at 877-732-6825 or just visit our website, drjamesdobson.org. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll see you again next time for the conclusion of Faith, Family, and Finding an Exceptional Life on the next edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.
Hello, everyone. This is James Dobson with Family Talk, and I have a very special offer for all of you who are listening today. You know, there's no higher calling as a Christian mom or dad than to teach children the gospel, the good news, and to provide spiritual training within the home. That's the most important task. But unless parents get serious about leading their families in godliness, they could, and in some cases are likely to, grow up without a strong faith, the faith of the generations that preceded them. And that's why I want to equip you with the sound teaching and practical wisdom that you need to raise a family of disciples for Christ. In a brand new collection of 8 DVDs titled Building a Family Legacy, I tackle common parenting questions and offer advice and encouragement based on the firm foundation of biblical principles. The Building a Family Legacy 8 DVD series is my gift to you to say thank you for your suggested donation of $50 or more. Now, I will accept no royalty or any portion of this donation. Every dollar will go to help support Family Talk. And we could use your assistance at this time. So I pray that this resource will be a great blessing to you and the children God has placed in your life. Request your copy by visiting drjamesdobson.org or call us at 877-732-6825. Again, that's drjamesdobson.org or call us at 877-732-6825. And thank you for your continued support and for listening to Family Talk.
We all know you love keeping up with old friends and posting pictures of your kids on Facebook, but did you know you can also find America's foremost family authority there? For up-to-date program information and the latest articles and insights from psychologist and best-selling author and my dad, Dr. James Dobson, go to your Facebook page and search for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk and like us today.
Just how tough is it to be a good parent today?
Dr. James Dobson for Family Talk.
A couple of years ago, I asked 1,000 mothers and fathers to describe their greatest frustrations in raising kids. I heard all kinds of goofy stories in response about sticky telephones and wet toilet seats and shoestrings in a knot. One mother actually wanted to know why it is that a toddler never throws up in the bathroom. That would violate some kind of great unwritten law of the universe, to be sure. But in my poll, parents didn't merely laugh about their frustrations. They tended to blame themselves. They said they were overwhelmed and were losing confidence and didn't really know how to cope anymore. How sad it is that this age-old responsibility of raising children has become so burdensome and guilt-laden. Actually, the facts won't support that self-condemnation in the majority of cases. Millions of parents have handled their child-rearing responsibility with great skill, and it's time that someone patted them on the back for their commitment and their sacrifice. And someday, when the frustrations of toddlerhood and the turmoil of adolescence have passed, they'll enjoy the sweet benefits of a job well done. Hang in there, moms and dads. Your kids will be young for the mere blink of an eye.